Long's aide, Bill Schirsch, remembers being awed by the sight and smell of the Afghans as he walked with Doc into the tent. One after another, the leaders stood up to address Long, in every instance telling him about the Russian gunships that were slaughtering their people and were invulnerable to the bullets from their rifles and machine guns. Schirsch himself remembers thinking that these were real freedom fighters. "They made the Contras and the Cambodians look like urban cowboys," he says. Like every other visitor from the United States who came here in those days, Doc Long could not help but respond when the entire assembly of Afghans began roaring in unison the cry of the jihad, "Allahu Akbar, God is great." Suddenly he too could feel the presence of the Red Army just across the mountains. He was with men his own age who were bearing arms, men with gray beards and fierce eyes telling him about the murderous helicopters. They wanted someone from the delegation to speak to them, and Wilson shrewdly declined, offering the stage instead to his chairman. Doc began by making a reasonably supportive but not excessive statement about the horror of the Soviet atrocities. From the tent came another great cry of "Allahu Akbar." Wilson watched with amazement and some amusement as the 72-year-old former professor of economics seemed to have an adrenaline rush. Suddenly the old man was roaring to these Muslim warriors that he was going to get them what they needed to knock the helicopters out of the sky. "Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!" they cried. Every time Doc said anything at all, the Afghans would clap, throw up their hands, and thunder back their battle cry. It was like the most heated revival meeting in East Texas. By the time Doc Long left the tent, Wilson realized that he had just witnessed the conversion of this enemy of the CIA into an honorary mujahid. That night, back in Islamabad, Zia administered the coup de grace. Ordinarily, he shunned his predecessor's luxurious palace, but Joanne and Charlie had told Zia how responsive Doc was when much was made of him. And so Zia had turned Bhutto's palace into a vision out of the Arabian Nights, and Joanne even got him to relax his Islamic restrictions for this one event. She understood that he could not include women at the dinner, but she insisted that he gather everyone together at the end of the evening or else the wives would feel insulted. As usual, Zia listened to his honorary consul, and after the final course, before inviting the women in, Zia asked Doc for a word alone. Like most Americans, about the only thing Doc Long knew about Zia was bad. He was a military dictator who presided over a fundamentalist state. But Zia had a way with Americans that always caught such suspicious visitors utterly by surprise. 20 years before this dinner, as a young Pakistani captain, Zia had been assigned to a year of military training at Fort Knox, Kentucky. One Friday evening, shortly after arriving, the Muslim officer was sitting alone in his austere quarters feeling homesick. There was a knock at the door. A man and his wife from Louisville introduced themselves and said they were interested in making friends with foreign officers. Would he like to go to dinner with them? Captain Zia ul Haq had never forgotten that generosity of spirit, nor that of the many other Americans he had come to know. In later years, whenever he received Americans in Pakistan, President Zia always returned the hospitality he had found in Kentucky with a warmth that was clearly genuine. Like everyone else, Doc Long found himself entranced by this man of charm, intelligence, and seeming sincerity. Wilson was not present at the encounter, but he quickly recognized that a communion of sorts had been established that night. The United States might have lost its nerve, but Chairman Clarence D. Long, an elder of the College of Cardinals, had personally committed himself, the entire Appropriations Committee, and the government of the United States to pouring hundreds of millions of dollars in aid to Pakistan, and, specifically, to providing those marvelous Afghan warriors with the weapons they needed. That night, in the ornate Islamabad Holiday Inn, Wilson was alone in his bedroom. For all his womanizing, he was not prone to pressing himself on his paramours. The door opened, and his true love entered with just a towel wrapped around her. For Wilson, all the nightmares were over. It was a return to the fairy tale. At the airport the next morning, there was an amazing farewell. Bands, flowers, carpets, gifts from Zia for everyone. As the plane headed west from Pakistan, Doc sat next to Charlie and told him, "Now my honor is at stake. I made a promise to those old men, and I gave my word to the president of Pakistan that I would get them the guns." The plane was locked into its final flight path back to Washington when Doc, after an intimate conversation with Joanne, suddenly ordered the pilots to land in Venice for an emergency refueling. By now entranced with Joanne, he had responded to her damsel-in-distress appeal when she'd explained that an important Save Venice Film Festival was underway and that she was already a day late. As they said their farewells on the runway, Charlie and Joanne embraced each and every member of the delegation. They had accomplished their mission with Doc Long and now had Joanne's business to attend to. They were to be guests of the Machiavelli family, admitted into all the elegant dinner parties and homes in Venice. There are pictures of Joanne with Charlton Heston and Roger Moore, the second James Bond, who impressed Wilson with his tales of the lovely ladies who wanted to meet 007 off-screen. As the two of them sat drinking by the Grand Canal one night, Joanne found herself overwhelmed with the realization that, as she says, we were just so good together. They conducted a post-mortem reviewing their triumphs. With Doc on board, Charlie told her, more money for Pakistan and the Mujahideen was a sure thing. The next step was to ensure that the money was used to get them the right guns. But for the moment, it was time to bask in their glory. We thought we were invincible, Joanne recalls. Then, to put the icing on the cake, paparazzi came by and began taking pictures of the glamorous couple. Soon a crowd gathered, asking for autographs. Joanne signed hers Ava Gardner, and Charlie, Gary Cooper.